4.5 years ago, we started out on a journey to answer the question, how does out-of-home advertising work? We've ultimately discovered that it works in lots of ways, from new users and store visitors to increased conversion rates online and an offline halo effect that makes everything else in the marketing mix seem to work better because of grassroots trust and credibility that out-of-home creates. And because perception is reality, and we're in a world of fake influencers and AI, showing up for real is increasingly becoming a competitive advantage. But how do you do that in a way that makes sense? Not just for your brand, but for your bottom line too. How do you continue to predictably and most importantly, profitably scale new channels like out of home as a D2C without sacrificing profitability? And why is right now, maybe better than ever before, the right time to start testing out of home today? To break that playbook down for us is Zachary Partis, co-founder of Black Valley, a media collective, and a CMO who has helped take two companies public and invested more than $10 million in Q4 last year in out-of-home for some of the fastest growing brands in the world. Zachary, welcome to the show.
Welcome everybody to the Out-of-Home Insider Show, a podcast like no other, hosted by the one and only Tim Rowe. Get ready to have some knowledge dropped on you and to be entertained, because nothing's more valuable than food for your brain. So sit back, relax, we're about to dive in as the best industry podcast is about to begin.
Thanks, Tim. Pleasure to be here. And thanks for that $10 million shout out. I'm sure I'll have every salesperson in the world reaching out to me after this.
Every single vendor. But here's the important disclaimer up front. If you're going to reach out to Zach, it better be with screaming good offers. Okay. Don't just blow up his inbox with a bunch of nonsense. Hey, would love to get a 15-minute chat. Hey, can I send over my media kit? If you're going to come, bring value. That's my, y'all better that's have my issue.
To otherwise, I'm going to have to put the blinders on. I'm going to get myself off of that LinkedIn for a while.
That's it. Yeah, we're going to have to send Zach into witness protection after this. But I appreciate you being here, because you made a case for out of home about a month ago. Why out of home? Why out of home specifically for D2C? I'd love to ask you that question as a starting place. Why out of home?
Yeah, no, Tim, I think you kind of touched on it earlier. You said this: we're living in this world of fake deception and AI, and nothing kind of feels real anymore. And I think out of home is one of those few channels that is tangible. It's still real, and not to mention it's sleek, it's sexy. You throw some killer creative up on a board or transit or head houses, people take note. And I think, you know, a lot of that reason is because we have such a love-hate relationship with our devices, and I think it's skewing towards hate for a lot of people right now. I know, just since we started this conversation 10 seconds ago, you know, I've got my phone going off, I got my kid on the iPad, the TV's on in the background. It's just people are tuned out, and you know, one would hope that driving down a freeway at 80 miles an hour, people aren't FaceTiming and they're not clicking around on their phone. It's one of the few chances of, unless you got, you know, kids in the car like you and I, one of the few chances to have some solace and to kind of look around you and see what's going on in the real world. So I think it's a special channel for that reason. You know, it's real, and it's a great opportunity to bring some killer, sleek, sexy creative to the table.
How did you come to... And logically, that makes sense. And I love the endorsement. I think that that's something we can all take out into the world in the conversations that we're having and share. How did you, like, from a mindset standpoint, were you exposed to out of home early on in your marketing career? When did you come to kind of appreciate the magnificence that out of home could bring to a marketing mix?
Yeah, you know, not particularly. Early on in my career, not particularly. I started my career in marketing and everything was digital, digital, digital. Everything was performance-based. You know, the pendulum was very much swinging in that direction. And I think we went too hard in that direction. So no, out of home wasn't a huge influence at the start of my career. I think where I really started to take note of it was, you know, right at the start of the pandemic, maybe a little bit before. And the reason for that is I look for arbitrage opportunities. You know, the whole world is rushing to these performance tactics, these digital tactics. They got to track everything. And it's like people have forgotten that advertising and marketing can have this creative and this artistic side that actually is compelling, that can draw people in. So, you know, you have the entire world rushing and freaking out. you know, I got to go digital. Everything's got to be tracked. Everything's got to be performance-based. Nobody's leaving their house anymore. And maybe that was true for a little bit. But, you know, a large part of the reason is there were deals to be had and there was opportunity on the table. And you can't pass that stuff up.
When you use the word arbitrage, and it's something that we've talked about here before too, underpriced, undervalued, misunderstood nature of out of home, how do you communicate that back to other decision makers? How do you socialize that internally to folks that maybe are resistant? Oh no, that's old school. It's not measurable. Why would I do a billboard? Again, logically makes sense. A big piece of owned real estate in the real world with your brand creative on it. That's a pretty powerful statement, but how do you maybe overcome some of those internal challenges?
Yeah, I always laugh when you know, execs or you know, senior leadership will come into a room and they'll say, you know, how can you justify this? And it feels so much like you're talking to your pops, like your grandfather back. Oh, when I was your age, hot dogs cost a nickel. And like, yeah, that was true. But like, we're also not dying of polio, right? So like, like some things have gotten better. Some things have changed. Like, let's open up our minds a little bit here. So how do I explain it? Like, yeah, of course, there's the money conversation. And what I like to say is, look, we're going to look at this thing directionally at the bottom of the funnel. We're going to look at things like, you know, win rate, our conversion rate, our speed to close. We're going to look and see what kind of uplift we get in those areas while these campaigns are running, of course. But like, let's not lose sight of the fact that there is huge value in running big, bold, visual, creative, that's fun, that's engaging, that's entertaining, and that gets eyeballs on the brand. A lot of people will look at out-of-home media and they'll say, well, okay, I've got this apple. How do I make it an orange, right? How do I take this channel, this big brand-led channel, and how do I turn it into a performance tactic? And it's like, you're missing the point. You've got this beautiful, shiny apple in front of you. Make it a fucking apple. Use it, eat it like an apple. And you know, that's the conversation that I tend to have. So yes, of course, you know, we'll always try to work in, you know, some tangible tracking and analytics to our out-of-home campaigns. But I really very much think that out-of-home is this gateway drug, and it's how we get people hooked on certain brands, engaged in certain brands, even those that aren't in a buying cycle right now. That's okay, because we need to be top of mind down the line. And if you're ignoring people who aren't ready to buy right now, right this very instant, you're short-sighted, and you know, you're hooked on the revenue drug right now, and eventually you're gonna tap out, right? There's only so much low-hanging fruit available to you on you know, programmatic and performance social. So that's how I view out of home. That's how I have those conversations with, you know, with leadership.
Such a great point. The now buyer, depending on what you sell, maybe it's 2-5% of the available market is in the market for the thing that you sell right now, versus the other 95-98% that will be in the market for your thing at some point in the future. The opportunity to get people hooked on a brand, that's such a powerful concept or an idea. Can you maybe give us some examples or brand specifics that you've worked on and kind of seen this effect take hold?
Yeah. I mean, you know where my mind always goes to? It's like Chick-fil-A runs these awesome out-of-home boards, right? And you've all seen them driving down the highway, and it's like, you know, the big cow, eat more chicken. It's like,
eat more chicken.
No one is driving their car down the road and sees a sign that says eat more chicken. Yeah, you know what? I really should adjust my diet, and I think I'll try to intake some more poultry. Yeah, sure. I'm sure 2-5% of people are like, you know what? I could go for a chicken sandwich. But for the rest of them, it's like, look, you've planted the seed, and the seed is there, and it's going to grow, and you're going to cultivate it. And then the next time, maybe they're not going to McDonald's. Maybe they're going to stop off at Chick-fil-A for one of those chicken sandwiches. So, and here's the beautiful part about Chick-fil-A's advertising. It's fun, but it's not necessarily mind-blowing, right? You've got a cow, and it's saying to eat more chicken, but it's memorable, and that stuff sticks with people.
And they've done it for so long.
I mean, it has to be more than a decade of that same creative, right?
Right. We all, even if we haven't been to a Chick-fil-A or don't have a Chick-fil-A near us, we've probably seen that creative. And I'm thinking back to an episode with my friend Lane Cox, who was really pivotal in the slice and kind of seamless in New York City Grubhub acquisition stages. And she talked specifically about buying national TV, buying broadcast national TV, and using kind of the Sonic playbook. We've all seen the Sonic slushy guys before, but Have we been to a Sonic? I don't know. I've been to a Sonic maybe once or twice when I lived in North Carolina. But we all know those commercials. Why? Because they have been repeated to us over and over.
Let me tell you, a story about Sonic, right? I'm a New Yorker. I didn't even know what Sonic was. Yeah. Is there a Sonic in our area? I don't think so. I think it's like a Southeast thing.
It's a Southern thing. Yeah.
So, you know, I met my wife 10 years ago, and her family's from Florida, and I had been exposed to Sonic commercials like my entire life. And we're driving down, you know, I got her mom in the car, and you know, she's clucking at me, and her dad's saying something, and they're fighting about who's driving and how dangerous it is. And I see a Sonic. I'm like, we gotta stop. I don't know anything about it. I don't know if the food's good, but like that slushy thing that they advertise, like I gotta experience that, even if it's just once. So yeah, no, I think you've hit the nail on the head. There's something to it.
On the bottom of funnel measurement, you mentioned some interesting metrics to track, or that you've tracked: the win rate, conversion rate, accelerating the sales cycle. What are some of those indicators that you look for, and what have you seen as an effect of adding out of home?
Yeah, I'm gonna go B2B on you for a second.
Let's do it. Yeah, I like that. So there's a lot of B2B use cases here.
There are a ton of B2B use cases, and it's so underutilized. So you've got, especially, you know, these SaaS companies, and they think very much, maybe a sweeping generalization, but I think a lot of them think in terms of performance marketing. They're looking at, you know, the sale here and now, what's right in front of them. But when you're selling software at, you know, anywhere from $10,000 a seat to you know, a subscription for, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100K a year, there are very few people that you're going to get on the phone with and have a conversation, and then within 6 weeks, close that deal, right? So I'll look at, especially on the SaaS side, I'll look at, you know, a benchmark study, like, what does our speed to close look like, you know, in an average quarter or an average two quarters? And if that cycle is 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, more realistically, it's usually like 6 months, 8 months. And then I'll study that against, you know, what is that? How does that number change once we start aggressively targeting with all kinds of media, but sure, out of home as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's so underutilized, especially on the B2B side. You have a pretty good idea of who your buyers are and where they're located physically. And you can create, you know, we've done this before, create heat maps, pockets of account-based marketing clusters. Where are they located? Are there areas where there's a higher density of those customers? And if the answer is yes, we'll put up boards right across the street from their office. You know, we'll put Captivate ads right inside the elevators they're building. Like, these are the things that you need to think about. And then you go back and you look at your speed to close and your win rate, and you will see directionally, I'm sure you can point to 100 different things that happened between Q1 and Q4. But my argument is the CEO, CRO, like, they're not necessarily going to care if you can't say, here's the smoking gun, right? What they want to see is they want to see that hockey stick. They want to see that uplift, and they want their BDRs closing in 4 months rather than 8. And I think linear, I think out of home, above line brand tactics can contribute a lot to that equation.
What are some of the other tactics not out of home? Yeah, what does some of that marketing toolkit look like when you're thinking about maybe building a B2B full funnel approach? You mentioned a few tactics there: linear television, the Captivate screens inside of elevators. But how do you maybe go through that planning? Is it looking at geographically, hey, what's available in the market? Is it a turnkey playbook regardless? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think there's ever going to be a turnkey playbook. I think each business and each, you know, commercial, how they handle commercial operations, it's going to differ, you know, company to company, brand to brand. So I think what it really amounts to is, like, you got to start and take a look at what is the problem you're trying to solve, right? And that's so cliche. Everyone says, oh, what's the problem? What's the goal that I'm trying to hit? But you'd be surprised how many people don't do that. If I had, you know, $10 for every CEO that came in and said, we need to be on TikTok, or why aren't we running boards? And I'm like, well, what's your reason for doing that, right? Why do you want to be, you sell software. Why do you want to be on TikTok and using influencers that do makeup tutorials, right? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So a lot of times I think we're distracted by the shiny object. So I'm trying to say is, it's got to be a customer approach. You got to start with, what am I trying to solve? And when you look at I'll go back to B2B again, since that's what we're talking about. When you look at a B2B audience for let's just say a SaaS product, a lot of times you've got people who, you know, your customers are on year-long buying cycles. They might not be ready to upgrade that software or to change vendors until, you know, October, November, December for the following year. So what are you going to do? You're going to pound them with programmatic media? You're going to pound them with ads on G2 and Capterra? You're going to run analyst relations for a year and try to do, you know, paid studies with Gartner? Sure, yeah, you can do those things. But realistically, like, you've got to make sure that you're top of mind so that when they are in that buying cycle, your name's on the short list. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I really do think it's a difficult one to conquer. You know, it really depends on the situation of the brand and the business.
What advice would you give to someone who's maybe listening to this conversation? They're convinced, you've convinced them. What is that first next step to getting started?
I wouldn't think about out of home. I wouldn't think about linear. I wouldn't think about programmatic. You're wasting your time if you're thinking about channel. What you need to be thinking about is, what is the goal here? What is the desired outcome of a campaign that I'm running? And then if out of home can support it, if it has a role to play, then okay, hit it. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. I would argue that a lot of times though, companies, D2C brands, B2B brands, you know, they spend all this time on the middle and bottom of funnel. It's, you know, all their efforts go into, okay, this person already has intent, or, you know, this person is already in the consideration cycle, but they ignore the 90% who have never even heard of the brand. And I think, you know, if you want to get started, you need to look at above line brand level channels, out of home, linear broadcast. I mean, even social can play a role. You're going to want to get started on, what is my goal? What am I trying to achieve? And then what channels can support it? Now, in terms of, you know, how do I get started working with vendors and stuff like that? Here's my take. I think I'm gonna get crucified for this.
Do it.
A lot of vendors,
like, people will love you for it.
Y'all are offering the same thing, right? There's no secret sauce. Oh, I have this inventory and I have that bonus spot. Like, dude, you guys are all selling the same thing. So what do I look for in a vendor? What do I recommend to, you know, someone who's just trying to get started out, you know, diving into the world of out of home? Look for someone who understands what your commercial goal is, what your desired outcome of this campaign is, because they're not going to compete on price. It's going to be a race to the bottom. They're not going to compete on bonus time or bonus cycles. They're not going to compete on inventory. It's all the same, right? For by and large, everyone's offering the same product. So find that person or people who truly understand your business and what you're trying to achieve, and work with that guy or work with that girl, because they're the ones who are going to ultimately pick the right spots for you. They're going to work with you on how to integrate that into your other tactics and the rest of your campaign. That would be my recommendation.
It's a great recommendation. We've got a couple questions from D2C Twitter. You ready for some Twitter questions?
Let's do it. AMA.
Let's do it. How important is channel diversification for you, and how do you think about cross-channel attribution? That from Corey Dobbins, CEO of Shoelace.
How do I think about
channel diversification and cross-channel attribution?
I think every channel has a role to play based on the buying cycle or the stage that the prospect is in, right? I'm not going to probably target, never say never, but I'm probably not going to use out of home for, you know, a point of sale offer, or someone who's very, very much down the bottom of the funnel. Chances are they're familiar with the brand. So how do I think about it? I look at it as each channel has a part to play. How much of that budget and how much of that, you know, effort and attention needs to go into that channel based on what I'm trying to accomplish. So if I'm a no-name brand, I'm a new D2C face, no one's ever heard of the product, right? What am I trying to accomplish? You know who did this well? And I'm gonna probably mispronounce the name, but Vuori.
Vuori. Yeah, RVCA style. I'll come back and edit this out. But yeah, Vuori nailed it.
They nailed it. Like, look, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade. I'm sure it's a great product. They're They're selling athleisure. They're selling pants. They're selling tops. Like 500,000 other companies doing the same exact thing. So what they started with was brand awareness. And you know, what they built too was affinity for the brand. Yes, they had a great product, but like having a great product is often not enough if no one has any idea about it. So made a strategic decision to say, all right, we're in a very competitive space. We got to get people to know who we are. They happen to use an influencer or series of influencers to help bolster that goal. They did it well, right? Otherwise, you're competing against every other maker and seller of leggings and tops and t-shirts. And look, there's no shortage, right? I can open my drawer right now. I got a drawer full of gym clothes that I wear and a lot that I don't. And the brands that I constantly wear are the ones that have just, you know, I've begun to understand and know and trust. So they did it well. I think the second part of your question was,
cross-channel attribution.
Yeah. That's a tough one with out of home. It's like, look, back in the day, those nickel hot dogs. Yes. I mean, you had companies using device fingerprinting and things like that. And that's, you can still do it. We can have a whole conversation about ethics and whether or not you should. But the fact of the matter is you can still do it. You can throw the QR code up there. You can throw a vanity landing page or, you know, vanity phone number. And yeah, you can tangibly one-to-one track that stuff. Should you? I don't know. It depends on the campaign, right? Like it goes back to my point earlier. Why are you trying to make an apple into an orange? Like look at how it supports the larger campaign as a whole. And you know, you might find that it's unnecessary to, you know, have those very bottom of funnel, analytics attached to, you know, a big transit campaign, for example.
If you're 1-800-Flowers, you should definitely put your phone number on it.
I would say
if you're not,
yeah,
right. If it's not a part of the brand, yeah. Why are we trying to distract folks? And there's a mix, right? There is a right place and a right time for some of those elements, but consider all of those things. And that kind of segues into the second question here from Mr. Mark Donatelli. He's the managing partner of Simply Limited, their consulting firm. What was the primary data strategy approach when it came to choosing the locations? Did you use data, or was it just as simple as, hey, there's a billboard across the street from these guys, let's go do that, or mix?
Yeah, no, a lot of it actually was the data-driven part of my out-of-home strategy usually happens at the onset of the campaign, not so much in the tracking and analytics, although you can, right? We talked about attribution models and whatnot. Sure, of course, there are ways that you can tangibly track, you know, out-of-home performance. But a lot of what I do is, you know, I use the data at the start of the campaign to figure out, you know, where I'm going to buy, what I'm going to buy, and why I'm buying it. So what I do is I'll look for both in-house data that a brand has and third-party data that will, you know, hoover up from various sources. And we'll look at, and I think I mentioned earlier in the call, like heat maps. Where are the clusters of my volume buyers, my repeat customers, where are the people who psychographically are showing the behaviors that my actual buyers now also share? So I'll look for like-minded people that, hopefully are geographically clustered in certain areas. And then that's where I tend to buy. That's one example. But here's another example. And it's not super data driven on the front end, but it is on the back end. You know, we've been experimenting with, you know, digital boards on main hubs through cities, you know, arteries, highways, things like that. And we'll actually swap in creative that has a very tangible limited time offer at a certain time. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you've got, and I'll leave the brand out of it, but let's say you've got the after school rush, right? It's 3:00. Maybe mom's going to pick up their kids and she's got to pass, you know, she's got to take, you know, I-95 or, you know, whatever it may be to go pick up the kids at school. Well, you know, what does every mom have in common? At 3:00, what does every parent have in common, right? Because I go and pick up my kid all the time.
Sure, same.
You know, I probably pick up my kid more often than I'd like to. But like, what do we all have in common as parents? It's 3:00. Your kid is screaming in the back, like they're fried from a day of school and they're super tired or screaming. And it's like, man, it would be awesome to throw some creative up, and we do. And Fry's the ultimate tool for, you know, keeping the backseat peanut gallery quiet for a few minutes, you know, and it's
legendary.
And you can throw a, you can throw an offer right there on the spot, you know, for that 1 hour. You know, that's the beauty of digital out of home. You can throw an offer right there for 1 hour, that after school rush, and say, you know, stop in now for, you know, free fries with any, with any purchase of a meal, whatever it might be. But you know, you're hitting someone in the moment at a particular time where emotions are running high. You can make a very bottom of funnel offer and then wipe it off the map when 5 o'clock rolls around and that offer no longer applies. So there's a lot of different ways that you can use data and based on those traffic patterns and like I said, those psychographics, what's happening in a specific area? Is school getting let out at that time? Is there a big sporting event? You know, is there a big shopping rush during the holiday season? This has got great foot traffic. These are all things that you can take into consideration when you're looking at what inventory should I go after.
They're cool opportunities. I've lived in kind of Western New Jersey and sold billboards in Eastern Pennsylvania, and there were some great auto dealers that they would just sponsor the local sports scores. They would turn the digital billboards into basically scoreboards for the Friday night football game, the Saturday afternoon basketball game. And they were broadcasting the sports scores via the digital billboards to the community and taking advantage of that as a branding opportunity. Again, grassroots, credibility. There's these little ways that don't always have to tie back to an offer, but can be timely, can be relevant, can be community driven.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Being able to be dynamic on digital is such a unique opportunity.
Here's what's nice about that. It's repetition, right? Like the same people are taking that same road twice a day, every day, Monday through Friday. You ever seen those ads on your local news? Time and temperature brought to you by. It's like,
sure. Yeah. Oh,
I couldn't tell you tomorrow what the time and temperature is going to be, but I know who runs those ads, right?
That's such a great point.
Every 10 minutes, it's in front of my face when I got the TV on in the background while I'm cooking dinner. So it does work. It is effective.
Zach, I can't thank you enough for being here. Tell us about Black Valley, a media collective. What are you guys up to there? What are you working on? Give us some of the download behind the scenes.
Yeah. So Black Valley is our fun little, side passion project. It's essentially a cooperative of the best of the industry. And we got people who do PR, people who do media planning and buying, people who do brand strategy. And we have, yes, we have people that do the performance marketing, bottom of funnel. And, you know, it's nice. It's flexible. Our clients can pull the pieces that they need, when they need it. And then, you know, when they don't, they can offload them again. So we just like to do really fun, really hard hitting work that makes impacts, on brands. And, right now we're working with a killer, new jewelry company out in LA. We also, I can't really disclose the name yet, but we're working with a very, very large, D2C brand. And we have a campaign that'll be coming out, in about 30 days or so. So pretty exciting stuff. Can't wait to share it with you guys.
Excited to share it with the community. Give us the lat and long. Where do we get in touch? Where do we follow you? Where are you most active on the socials?
Oh, yeah. I would say I'm more active these days on LinkedIn. Not really a big Facebook or Twitter guy. X, I guess they can say. I'm definitely not a TikTok guy.
If you call it X, that's how we know you're a boomer.
Yeah, right. No, I'd say LinkedIn is the best. You can always email me, Zach at Black Valley, BLKVLLY.com.
Excellent. So, yeah, we'll link to all that in the show notes so that it's easy to get in touch. I'm stealing this question from Tim Ferriss, and really it's a question meant for this podcast specifically. If you could put any message on a billboard, what would it be?
Oh man, that's a brutal question to ask me at the end.
Fucking brutal question. I know.
Any message in the world?
Any message in the world.
Chill the fuck out. Everyone relax. It's all going to be okay. All right. I know life is stressful, but like, guys, man, it's enjoy life for a second. I just, maybe it's just me and like what I experience in the Northeast day to day, but the rat race is real. Everyone's got to just relax. Like, look up from your phone for 10 seconds, say hello to someone. It's really, it does a world of good. And maybe I wouldn't phrase it like that, but I think that is the central message.
I think it would be effective creative. Chill the fuck out.
Chill the fuck out.
Zach, thanks again for being here. Thanks for sharing as much as you have.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Pleasure.
Absolutely. The pleasure's all mine. And if you found this episode to be helpful, please share it with someone who could benefit. As always, make sure to smash that subscribe button. And wherever you're listening, leave the podcast a review. That's how you help us grow. And we'll see y'all next time.
But did you try? It might take a lifetime to know just who you are.
Quarter century, I finally came to my senses. I finally got my hand upon the tinted Benz, kid. I see the world clear through my tinted lenses. With the dream and the drive, the possibilities endless. Now print that, send this all the way to Tokyo. Take a trip down south, down to Mexico. Next stop, Shanghai, the world class trade show. First class all the way, cause that's how we roll. Yeah, call us the rockstar businessman. Rockin' shows, we handle business, man. We got our own future in the palm of our hands, cause divided we fall and together we stand.